Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined as always by Nate Atkins. Joined is the wrong verb to use because we've both been here. I think I got here at 11:25 today. Nate got here shortly after that. It is currently 10:44 p.m. The marathon of the draft is over. We're just going to kind of, the one on after the first round about Latu, that one was a little more focused. This is going to be kind of a scattershot, see what we can get type of thing. What's your big takeaway from the draft and the way they handled it?
I mean, I feel like the first night in the podcast we did after that kind of summed up that night is the one night that I felt like was a departure from the normal model that we see under Chris Ballard. And then they got right back to it after night one. So night one was when we saw them make attempts, what they called major offers, to trade up in the first round, almost certainly for a pass catcher. Didn't work, but they took the top defender on the board, Laiatu Latu, who was, you know, everything they had not drafted before at defensive end, production. They wanted a guy who could come in and day one be that difference maker. That to them was the difference between him and a guy like Dallas Turner, who's just a little bit more developmental. All the other picks, or at least the process to get to those picks, seemed much more like long-term minded, best player available type. You know, it wasn't really about the roles or the needs so much. Even the second round pick, you know, Adonai Mitchell, you know, yes, he could be a guy who comes in and fills a big need. And early on, he could do that, but they traded back to make that pick. There was a big run on cornerbacks early in day two. That felt like an obvious need. They had really no interest to go into that. They just didn't seem – they operated the rest of their draft as if they didn't really have needs that they felt like they needed to force, because they followed up the Mitchell pick with two backup offensive linemen, you know, and then they went for very specific kind of minor roles, whether it was punt returner like Anthony Gold or – really just depth positions at every other position after that. So the rest of this very much felt like guys that fit how Chris Ballard normally drafts with, there was one exception to that, but guys they normally go after, not worrying about the roles they have, really made an offensive and defensive line and depth at certain positions such a focus over, you know, over maybe guys who can make a year one impact. I thought Latu was the one guy that was a departure from that. I almost wonder if that's kind of fit the plan in a way this year, where they wanted to make the first round about, you know, that's our chance to get a guy in the top half of the first round that can come in and make an impact at a premium position. And in their minds, free them up to just kind of go back to, let's do this long-term approach for the rest of the draft. So that's just kind of the vibe I got out of it.
Yeah. I think one of the things I was wondering, and he didn't really address this, but well, he kind of did with running back. I was wondering if some of the not addressing needs had to do with just him feeling like certain positions didn't have good prospects in this draft. We were asking about backup running back, and he said he liked the guys that got taken in like the second round and the early third, which I don't really know if maybe I really don't think the Colts were going to do that. But I wonder if that was – and you asked about the cornerbacks last night and if that run had anything to do with why they didn't take a cornerback on the second or – in the second or third round. I kind of wonder if maybe – he's not quite telling us the whole thing, or if there's more there in terms of they made picks in the spots that they felt like there was actually depth in this class. Because one of the things that you and I have talked about is just – you know, after a certain point with the cornerback class, it didn't feel like there was anybody that really fit their style of play or their benchmarks that they have to hit physically. at cornerback. It wasn't supposed to be a good safety class. I think Jalen Simpson's is supposed to be a corner. You know, so but he's clearly developmental as a fifth round pick. And then Micah Alexander is, I mean, he's a Kenny Moore backup, would be my guess. So they didn't really address that. Like, you can't really expect to get a cornerback starter in the fifth round. Like, Tariq Woolen is not going to happen every year. You can't count on that. So, like, not taking one in the second or third, I wonder if it's just like a – maybe they had a couple guys up high that they liked and they didn't get to them because of that big run in the second round, and they were just kind of like, well, we're done.
Yeah, I wondered about that. That's why I wanted to ask him about that, because the night before he revealed, like, they were willing to go up in the first for – again, what almost is certainly a pass catcher. But, you know, I think that kind of tipped me off to the fact that they wanted to get a high-end pass catcher, a guy that they felt had first-round ability. And that's what they ended up doing with Adonai Mitchell in the second round. I think they thought to trade up for a corner at that spot meant, you know, they just didn't feel like they could part with the third-round pick. I know one of the teams that traded up gave up a third-round pick to get into that. They felt like they had to go out and get that wide receiver on day two, which is always when Chris Ballard seems to get his wide receivers. So it does go back to what we've kind of wondered with this front office and regime, is that they just seem to feel a different way about their secondary than the rest of us do. Chris Ballard compared it to the offensive line that a lot of people had questions about last year, and then they rolled back that group and it was a lot better with another year under their belt. You know, we've gotten into why that's kind of a not the most fair comparison, I don't think, but that's what they're operating under. Is they right now they've set it up to where their outside corners, and again, this is the other thing too, is they have cap space. They can go sign guys after the draft, and we'll find out here probably the next week whether that, you know, is somehow part of a coordinated plan. Do they have guys that they've been waiting to sign in those moments? Chris Ballard tonight said it just kind of, you know, he didn't really get into that. He just said it kind of depends. But as of right now, I think at outside cornerback, it feels likely that they want to roll with Juju Brents and Jalen Jones. They added Jalen Simpson, cornerback out of Auburn. I think he's going to be the one outside corner they've so far added to the mix out there. Probably more of a depth move because he's sort of, you know, he's been in between corner and safety. But yeah, that's just kind of they didn't see that as glaring of a need to go and trade up in the second for guys that, you know, you could absolutely have argued they should have. Maybe a guy like Cooper DeJean felt like someone who should have gone in the first. We had mocked him there when we did our mock and had them trade back and take Cooper DeJean. He felt like a guy that maybe you go up and get if you feel like you really need an outside corner. I think the way that played out, they told us what they really wanted is to get one more kind of high-end upside talent pass catcher for Anthony Richardson, and that mattered to them more than that outside cornerback, and that's kind of how it played out.
Yeah, the A.D. Mitchell pick has been interesting. I think it's the one that a lot of people have paid attention to, just Mitchell's reaction. He wasn't happy about where he got picked. Ballard had his expletive-laden rant about anonymous sources and stuff like that, but whether it's that or whether it's just how raw he is, clearly this is a player that the league wasn't super sure about, because, you know, a lot of people had him in the first round. And based on talent, like, his relative athletic score is, like, basically he's as athletic as a receiver as you can get in the draft. And, like, normally those guys push up higher, even if he only have 1 year of production. Like, Xavier Leggett, from South Carolina, I think only had 1 year of production essentially. And he went at the end of the first round, and like three receivers were taken after him before the Colts took Mitchell. So clearly there's something about Mitchell, whether it's the game or whether it's, you know, something that teams have discovered off the field or whatever, that dropped him in the draft. I don't think that's unfair to say. And I think that's part of it is just, yeah, if he can put it all together, and do more of the flashes that you've seen at Texas and at Georgia, yeah, they've got a real chance at something. But there's also, you know, some consistency issues. with him in terms of the way he plays.
Yeah, there's certainly something that that at least gave the league some trepidation with him, because you look at the profile, like we said, his relative athletic score is a 9.99. You pretty much cannot get better than that, just in terms of the raw abilities. And that's a mix of his 4.3 speed, his explosion jump skills are incredible, and he's also 6'2 and 205. He also came from a big school, so two big schools, really, Georgia and Texas. So he's done it at a high level. He's done it in big games where he's had 5 touchdowns in the college football playoff. It is 1 year of big production, so I could see that maybe being a separator for, you know, if he was measured up with some of the guys who went in the first round who had multiple years. But the point where he fell in the draft kind of suggests to you that there was something more there. And the Colts, you know, of course, this happens like when a team is the team that picks that guy, they're gonna come to his defense when there are concerns out there like that. That's a lot of what Chris Ballard was doing. And obviously we know they have a belief in him because they took him there. And I do think a lot of what they're saying is sort of genuine love, but they certainly had some level of trepidation themselves because they traded back to take him. And if they really thought that this was a guy that that just had that same profile I just described, and if they didn't believe there were any concerns with him, that's the type of guy that you probably are trading up into the, you know, late first or early second to get him. In the event that no team wanted to trade with you, you still would have taken him. You would have been shocked that he was there at your pick 46 that they had, but they chose to trade back and risk someone else coming up and taking him. But what they said was, we were confident that no one was going to. That's almost a recognition of, you know, this is a guy that the league is just a little bit down on and we can wait a little bit on. And that doesn't mean that they necessarily, you know, that clearly they don't rate those concerns the same way that everyone does, but there's a little bit of risk with him for sure. I mean, it is a boom or bust type of pick in the second round. And maybe that goes away a little bit from what Chris Ballard does sometimes. I don't know. It's an interesting pick in that way at wide receiver specifically to, you know, he is, it's one of the, there's not many guys he's drafted who feel like they have at wide receiver, who feel like they truly have that like number one, you know, just game breaking type of ability. So that's the swing they're taking there. I think it's a huge bet on Reggie Wayne. The fact that you have a receivers coach that played this position, that really understand what it's like to be wired as a, you know, as a receiver who wants the ball a lot and thinks you should have gone higher and all of that kind of stuff. They're tasking him with a lot to balance all of this with, you know, a room of a few different personalities and emotions. And a lot of that's good stuff, but there's one football and you're trying to, you know, divide up roles here. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out, but it was like in their own totally different way, sort of their upside shot at wide receiver to pair with the upside shot they took last year with Anthony Richardson. If those two can get to that upside together, I mean, you can see them going really, really, really far with just the abilities, the pure athletic abilities that Adonai Mitchell and Anthony Richardson both have.
Yeah, I kind of think of the receiver room right now, and I think this is probably the way the Colts think of it, is they've got what they feel are probably two consistent targets in terms of Michael Pittman Jr. and then Josh Downs. You know, Josh Downs had 68 catches last year. 68 catches is not something to sneeze at. And I think they probably feel like, you know, they've got the guys they can rely on from a consistency standpoint. The piece that was missing from the offense last year, and a lot of this has to do with the quarterback, but they said at the beginning of the offseason, Chris Ballard came into his postseason press conference and said, we need to get more explosive on offense and we need to limit the explosives on defense. They still think that Alec Pierce is a good deep threat, and that, you know, I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but it's good to remind people, you know, they feel like a lot of Pierce's season last year was Gardner Minshew not throwing the football. Mitchell can do, I think, more than Pierce can. Or I think the Colts feel like Mitchell can do more than Pierce can at this point, because I know that they have some concerns about Pierce, you know, what he does when he's not going deep. And Mitchell, you know, Shane Steichen kept talking today about, like, he separates really well at the top of his route. They really like the suddenness. But I also think that the way they kind of view it is, we've got these two guys that we feel like we can rely on for consistency's sake, and we're just going to take as many shots with options of being explosive and see where that lands us. You know, we've got Pierce, we've got Mitchell, to some degree, Anthony Gold, and I think Anthony Gold is primarily a return man. But he's fast. You know, he's the kind of guy that you would try to use on like gadgets and stuff like that. He has gotten deep in the past. And then Jelani Woods is another example of this. Like, if you can get a healthy Jelani Woods, the thing that he adds to your offense that none of the other tight ends do is explosiveness down the seam and downfield. So it feels like they're going to rely on Pittman and Downs and kind of hope that one of those guys that I just mentioned emerges. And if all of them take a step forward, then they have a real chance. But I also don't know. I also think that for Pierce and Mitchell, I think it's possible, maybe even likely, that the way this offense is going to look next year, that those guys are not going to be high volume guys. They're going to be big play guys. Because, I mean, we've talked about this before, but Anthony Richardson still only has 170 snaps under his belt. And I don't know that they're going to be throwing 40 times a game with him right off the bat. I could be wrong. Maybe they are, but I just don't think so.
Yeah, and there's still going to be some moments for Anthony that are rookie moments for him. Like, I think there's a lot of reason to be encouraged by, especially, you know, he can throw to all parts of the field, and I think he showed some flashes of building that anticipation and all that other stuff, but it's going to be up and down. The thing they can rely on in this offense is that running game of him and Jonathan Taylor, if they're out there together in the backfield and everything they can design up there. And it does feel like Josh Downs and Michael Pittman Jr. are like your singles and doubles you can count on. And then these other guys have to provide the triples and homers, and you don't always know where they're going to come from between those three, Jelani Woods, Adonai Mitchell, and Alec Pierce. It's very interesting to compare Mitchell and Pierce because I do think they'll both play mostly the same role, which is sort of that deep speed Z receiver, lower volume splash play guy. They're kind of like the inverse of each other as prospects, though, because Alec Pierce, I mean, you'd never heard anything about any concern any coach or scout had about him. It was not as good of a receiver class, but they ended up going in a similar range of the draft after the Colts traded back and got them. But they're like totally different levels where Alec Pierce has one amazing, you know, trait, his ability to get down the field, but they're still trying to make sure they can build the quarterback and the passing game to tap into. Mitchell does have a lot more that he could potentially tap into, and it's just more of a, you know, more of a gamble on can you get him to that place and build a consistent and polished version of him through some of the things that, you know, that he's going to have to fit in here. And it is a real bet on Shane Steichen and Reggie Wayne to kind of make all these pieces work together and let them build chemistry with Anthony Richardson. And yeah, it's really interesting, but I think that I like that you brought up Michael Pittman Jr.'s and Josh Downs' role in all this, is that Pittman especially, that contract, they're paying for such a floor with Michael Pittman Jr. by paying that market rate that they did to him, is that they know they have that go-to guy already. They know they have that guy that Anthony Richardson can turn to and find, and he's open when he's not open. It's not like these guys have to rise to that level right now. It's instead like if they can rise to that level and be that that extra gear, then they know they feel like they really have that upside, that high octane upside in the run game. These are the guys who can help get them there in the passing game. And if they do, all of a sudden you have an offense that is incredibly hard to defend. And that's ultimately overall the bet that they took when they hired Shane Steichen and drafted Anthony Richardson in the first place. And these are sort of like the complementary pieces that can get them there.
Yeah. I think the offensive line in the third and fourth round was another thing that sort of spoke to like the idea of attacking the depth of this class rather than, you know, attacking the parts of this draft class that they feel have a lot of depth, as opposed to, you know, just blindly going for need, because they didn't need an offensive lineman, not from a number standpoint, not really at all. All five starters return. Their top two backups are the guys who played the most snaps. The other two backups who played significant snaps, Blake Freeland
and Wesley French are both back. They, especially with Freeland, you have lots of reason to believe that he's going to be better in year two. Maybe, I mean, maybe he's not going to ascend to starter level, but if he gets a lot stronger, you have a pretty good swing tackle there. And I mean, that's seven guys right there with some other guys that didn't really play but have played, like Danny Pinter's back. He's played before. You've got Josh Sills, who didn't play a lot last year but has played in the NFL before. I don't think most people were talking a ton about offensive linemen because, you know, if and when they did, it was down the road. But I also was thinking, you know, the upgraded depth here, I think it's fair to say that Tanner Bordellini gives you a much higher upside as a rookie than maybe Wesley French does, even now 2 years into the league, if something happens to Ryan Kelly. Same, and who knows with Matt Gonzalez, I think is a little harder for me to get my head around just because he didn't play much last year. But they feel pretty confident in his ability. And, you know, a third and a fourth round pick in terms of investments, when those two guys are in depth pieces, you've really upgraded sort of the pedigree of your backups. That means you now have two fourth round picks and a third round pick on the offensive line in depth positions. That's fairly decent investment. You can get starters and good players in the offensive line, especially in the interior, in that spot. It's interesting. I do think it's forward thinking. I also think that it has some benefit now. And you don't. No one likes to talk about this. Like I just had to do I did a roster projection for what the 53-man roster might look like, and the thing about that is, like, I'm projecting everyone to be healthy because we don't know about any injuries at this point, but there will be injuries. And so, like, I always think about when the Saints took Ryan Ramczyk. I was still covering the Saints, and it was like, you're taking a tackle? You have Teron Armstead and Zach Strief. You have these two pillars of your offensive line. Why are you taking a tackle in the first round? And Zach Strief got hurt in the first game for the season. Kind of the same way like the Jonathan Taylor pick. They pick Jonathan Taylor. You've got Marlon Mack. Marlon goes down with a torn Achilles in the first quarter of the first game. It's sometimes making these picks ends up working out in ways you can't fully see coming. And that was one of the other things I thought about those picks is they've bolstered that in a way that if like Wesley French in particular did not have to play extended periods of time last year. If that happens this year, there's a lot more competition for who that top backup spot is, and that's probably a good thing. It is a good thing. It's better to have. You really can never have enough good linemen.
Now that's the thing you hear around the league is that O-line depth is just so bad, and once you suddenly need one, and everyone wants you to trade for somebody, it's like, where? Who is just handing out their free depth that they're never going to use? It's a hard thing to get. I think Chris Ballard tipped us off when he talked on Friday, and I had asked him, like, now that you have the quarterback, you know who it is, you believe in him, how does that change, you know, the positions you want to emphasize? And he said, you know, I'm always going to be about protecting that quarterback. And at the time we thought, okay, but you have your starting offensive line. This was basically their way of, there is a forward-looking element to this, but it's as much, I think, a look at, you know, we're just not going to let any injuries, you know, on the offensive line be the reason we can't protect Anthony Richardson. Like, they really are doubling and tripling down on that idea of we're going to give him every shot in terms of the guys that we put out there and the plays that we call and design and all of that to, you know, to keep some of those unnecessary hits off of him. And both of these guys, Matthew, you know, Gonzalez and Tanner Bordellini, are built like that. Like, their best skills, from what I can see, are just some of their natural ability to drop back and protect firmly in the pocket as interior players. That's kind of the bet that they're taking on them. Plus, you know, they love, you know, their fit, their demeanor. Tony Sperano Jr. had such a nice year last year with this offensive line group. I think they've given him a little bit more ownership that when he really loves a guy and feels like he's going to fit, that they trust that even more. But it was bold for them to trade up in the third round for Matthew Gonzalez, and it sounds like they're going to play him at a position he hasn't played yet, and he didn't play much last year. So that tells you that's how much they really loved that makeup of him and the skill set and all of that. I mean, it's I do think you can nitpick it some for sure, because that was like you're going to trade up to create depth at the offensive line when your outside cornerback room is the way it is. But I do think that does speak to kind of what, you know, what, where I can take their side with this is kind of what I said last week about all this, which is like the top need of this team is to get Anthony Richardson to his ceiling. And there is a part of that that is keeping him out on the field and making sure that no injuries or aging or whatever that can happen on the offensive line is going to take you away from that. And there is an element of it where it's like Ryan Kelly, though he had a very nice bounce back year, he has had those nicks and bruises. And like you said, it may end up being for more than just a game at a time. It might be an extended absence. And then, you know, Braden Smith went through it a little bit last year. And then you just don't know. You just don't know when someone's going to suddenly you need a left guard for 5 weeks and you don't have one. That's the type of thing, the nightmare scenario that they could see unfolding that they're just taking themselves out of. And so there's opportunity cost to that on the defense, I think, that they didn't add there. But it's still in the name of like Anthony Richardson is the pillar and we have to protect him at all costs.
Before we move on to where I want to finish this, any back end picks beyond the linemen, you know, fifth to seventh that have your eye?
I have one.
Sorry, that was a big one.
Yeah, go ahead with yours.
Jalen Carlisle, I'm really interested in. The safety turn linebacker thing in a league where linebackers have to be increasingly good in coverage and open space really intrigues me. Like they did it with Ronnie Harrison last year. It was a successful transition, but to put it hopefully gently, Ronnie Harrison's best days are behind him, whereas Jalen Carlisle, you assume his best days are in front of him, and they've had really good track record of developing these guys in the past. I'm just really intrigued by that. The safety turn linebacker, they've got history with that. Divine Diablo with the Raiders, but also Harrison here. You know, I'm intrigued by that specific mold. I also just want to. Real quickly, well, I'll let you go first and see if you bring up the person that I was going to the addendum I was going to bring up.
Yeah, well, I agree with Jalen Carlisle. We were talking about how I'll have a different guy in a second, but on him, we were talking about how like I thought this was a draft that we both did that they would take that backup linebacker and continue their train of start him on special teams and then eventually develop him into a starter the way that EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin were. They just went for a different type. They went for a type that's more what they just kind of lost. And Shaquille Leonard had more of those, even though he's their most natural technical cover guy. He was a huge force on third downs, and they lost that. And Ronnie Harrison kind of filled in, and that experiment helped them out. But Jalen Carlisle is a guy with a little bit more upside. I'm not saying he's a Shaquille Leonard type, but it's more like, his best upside, best skills are that ability to cover like he just did in the SEC. He started as a corner, and then he was a safety in the best conference that there is and was pretty good at it. So I like that one. The guy that is interesting to me is, we brought him up a little bit, Anthony Gould, the wide receiver out of Oregon State, just because I kind of knew in Orlando that Chris Ballard was going to draft somebody that he just loved as a return man. And it became more of a priority to him when they changed the kickoff rules, and now you need two guys back there, and it's sort of the types that you need back there. The way that Anthony Gould laid it out is almost like you need more like punt return style return men than just your natural old school kick returner guy. And he's just so explosive, one of the absolute best out there, multiple touchdown returns and some great highlights. But he's also a guy that is built perfectly, and his experience aligns with him being a backup slot receiver. So he's talked a lot about being more than that. I don't see a role for him just to start the season with the receivers that they have. But you have to remember that like they got 17 games out of Josh Downs, which is a great accomplishment. But that's still a guy who is like you know, 5'9" and 173 pounds going across the middle, and you just never know. And if you were to lose him, you know, they just don't have another guy who's a natural slot. You know, Michael Pittman Jr. can move in there a little bit, and they can, but like to actually have a guy who can play that and keep some of those same pages in the playbook. Anthony Gold feels like a nice bet to sort of fill a couple of different roles. So backup slot receiver, but also a guy who has upside to be a dynamic punt returner, maybe dynamic kick returner if he can get to his ceiling. So I like the way that they got that pick done.
Yeah, that's actually where I was going to go. I love punt return. I love watching punt returners, good ones, fearless ones specifically. I really couldn't stand watching Isaiah McKenzie's lack of decision-making in that role last year, and I thought they needed to have somebody. The new kickoff return, I think, you know, Chris Ballard probably felt like, hey, having two return spots, like where you're returning more, is better. I've wanted them to get a punt return. That really interested me. Where I want to end this pod, the thing about the fifth to seventh round picks is, yes, you get some Jalen Joneses, but you also get like Darius Rush was in the fifth round last year and got cut and had a couple chances to stick other places and didn't. So we can get into those guys, I think, as maybe things develop. But I want to get into the needs that are left on the roster after this draft and how they can address them. I think the obvious two really are cornerback and free safety.
Yeah,
you can go.
So that's where like so many people on the outside, especially nationally, you know, I get how it works with mock drafts. You're looking over 32 teams. So you look up the Colts and you think, what's their weakest position? It's outside corner. They're drafting one first round, if not first round, second round. And they didn't end up doing it until their third pick in the fifth round, when they got Jalen Simpson. And then the next round, they got a backup nickel in Mike Abraham. But it really, to me, it kind of just speaks to, it is the way the draft went out when they had other priorities, which is all about, you know, that game-wrecking edge rusher and the help for Anthony Richardson. But I do think part of it is that if you were to look at like, hey, is there a position that if you didn't get in the draft, you still feel like there's life on the free agent market? It was in the secondary. Mostly at safety is where is the big names like Justin Simmons and Quandre Diggs are still out there. I still think that's a little dreamy for them, but they do have the cap space since they redid DeForest Buckner's deal. But there's also guys like a guy like Steven Nelson, I think, could come in at outside corner and raise the floor of that group and give you some experience, which is the thing the draft wasn't going to answer for them, was the just sheer youth and rawness of their outside cornerbacks. Between Juju Brents only played 9 games, Jalen Jones played all of them but had rookie moments, was a 7th round pick. Dallas Flowers missed the whole year and is coming off the Achilles tear. So you add Jalen Simpson to that, Mike Abraham, they may be nice players down the road. They've never played in the NFL either. So I think this is the time they need to go out and sign at least, you know, a Steven Nelson type, some kind of veteran outside cornerback. I think that's got to be a bare minimum move at this point. And then safety would be, you know, just if they want to get aggressive, if they want something bigger than the idea they have in Nick Cross, free safety would be the one potential big swing they could take.
Yeah, and they could go lesser if they wanted to at free safety. Like a guy like Marcus May has played a lot of football. Obviously, he doesn't give you the upside of Justin Simmons or Quandre Diggs, but, you know, maybe you feel like you can squeeze, you know, whatever football he's got left in him out of him.
That's true.
You know, like you could, there still is the possibility of like a Rodney McLeod-ish type signing where the player isn't like Justin Simmons, you know. But yeah, there's definitely options there. I think cornerback and safety, like I know the fan base is talking about this because that's pretty much all anybody was talking about in my mentions other than the UDFAs, which the UDFAs, well, we can, I don't have any bonus information yet. There's none on the Colts yet, which kind of usually guides you as to what mattered most to them. They did take two quarterbacks, which I thought was interesting. But like corner, you have, you know, you've got like the Steven Nelsons, who knows with Xavien Howard, if his foot's okay. You know, there's guys who have been big names in the past. Those two positions, I think, like we've talked about them so much and about the experience needed. I think people are pretty used to that. One of the ones that I think is still a pretty big need is backup running back.
Yeah.
You know, they lost Zach Moss, who was very valuable to them last year, incredibly valuable to them last year, just in terms of the snaps he was able to give them when Jonathan Taylor wasn't in there. They've got Trey Sermon. He's the nominal backup right now. But Trey Sermon has never rushed for more than 167 yards in a season in his three-year NFL career, and he's already played for three separate franchises, despite the fact that was a former third-round pick. So maybe you get like a boost from him. Maybe they saw something at the end of the season that they feel like he can take the next step. But like that's not a super great profile. And then the other two guys that are on the roster right now that have played, Evan Hall and Tyler Goodson, are kind of more pass catching types, pass catching like speed type. Well, you know, that's the way I thought they were going to use Hall. That's the way they did use Goodson. Those two kind of seem like they're competing for the same roster spot to me, is, mm-hmm. you know, that pass catching back role. They don't really have another like pounder, but besides Sermon, they have Xavier Scott, who's kind of like a developmental, like see what happens guy. But that's it. That's the whole room right now. And here's the interesting thing. I looked up the free agent running backs that are still available. Does Ezekiel Elliott interest you?
Not a ton, but in the spot that they're in right now, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I know. I was looking at that too. There's like Rashad Penny. If Rashad Penny is healthy, what's weird is the Eagles signed him, and then like he has averaged 5.6 yards a carry for his career, but he just never gets that volume role. He got to Philly and they just never used him. But he's only 28. That one interests me a little bit more. But yeah, it's, you know, Damian Harris. There's
did Damian Harris yeah. retire?
Did he? I missed that.
There was,
oh something. Yeah, you're right. He did retire.
Yeah, Damian Harris retired. Because I saw that name too, and I was like, oh, that's sort of interesting, but not if he's retired. Like everybody
yeah,
else, everybody else on here is very old. Like,
yeah,
at least in like running back terms, like sometimes in actual age terms, like Latavius Murray's on here at 34. That's legitimately old for any NFL player. But like some of these other guys are like guys who like are kind of like Elliott. They've like, you know, their time has passed them by in the NFL, and we've seen them kind of bounce around. Kareem Hunt's the same way, I think.
Yeah, that's why Rashad Penny's the one that interests me, I guess, if I had to pick one, because he's 28, but like his mileage is basically the equivalent of like a season and a half, maybe. It's like 348 carries. Yeah. Like I say, he's averaged 5.6 in his career. I just don't know why he was not used at all in Philly last year, when that kind of had some hype. They had some other good players like DeAndre Swift. But yeah, I will give us a, we got to take a small victory lap, at least on this podcast. So we did for the second straight year correctly project, we get the mocks mixed up because we do so many of them. So it's different. Last year we had the first two picks in our dual mock draft. This year it didn't go that way. I did have the Adonai Mitchell in the second round of the one I had to put up the day of day two. But I will say in the one we did, the dual mock, I thought we were close on one, which is Trey Benson, the running back out of Florida State.
Oh, Ballard.
That was the guy. Yeah. Chris Ballard brought him up, and he brought up two that he liked. It was him and I forget the other one, the one who went before him. But when he got to Trey Benson, he said, I really like Trey Benson. He went with the second pick of the third round. I think that might have been their third round pick if he was there, because of the drop off at that position. The fact they don't have a second running back, there was much more of a clear and present role for him than Matthew, Gonzalez. And it was almost like once he was off the board, the way that Ballard laid it out was like, well, now we're not taking a running back. So I think that was the guy that they were, I think, hoping to get. Now that they didn't get him, it does get interesting because of what you said. Like, I think, and you can talk yourself into the way that Trey Sermon played in a very limited role was good, but it could be a big volume role. It was last year for Zach Moss. It's two straight years that Jonathan Taylor has dealt with some injuries. And what you really don't want to happen is if Taylor goes down for a significant stretch, that all of a sudden you don't want to get to the point where you feel like you're going to run Anthony Richardson a lot out of necessity. Like, that is going to undo this conversation about keeping hits off of him and managing that risk appropriately. And then all of a sudden, if you're not going to do that, I mean, are you just going to turn into like a high volume passing attack? And that's not really how you built the rest of your team. So it is a sneaky need to get a number two running back in there who can play with volume. So I'm just not entirely sure where that is. I mean, Zeke Elliott is the one who's out there who has proven he can do that, but it's one of those diminishing return type of things where it's like, because he's run the ball so much, he has so much mileage. He's up to 2,000 career carries. That's crazy. He has 1,800 more carries than Rashard Penny. Last year he averaged 3.5 yards a carry. Granted, it was a mess of an offense in New England, but maybe it's enough of a guy that can just kind of get there and take a role. But yeah, it's a potentially tricky. It's one of those things that doesn't feel like a backup running back behind a superstar running back doesn't feel like a huge talking point until Taylor goes down, and then it. All of a sudden, it's a pretty significant one. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do there.
Yeah. Trying to think if there's another area of need. I really think that's it. I mean, I think there's some positions that look really strong now, and they're the Ballard positions. Offensive line, defensive line, those positions in terms of their depth. Like, when I did my roster projection, I cut several players off the defensive line who played – like significant snaps last year. Especially
to the point where like they're so deep on the defensive line, especially really all the spots that they spent their seventh round pick on Jonah Laulu out of Oklahoma that they, they loved his workout and his upside and all this stuff. But like, I don't know how that could possibly pay off with the numbers that they have on the defensive line. I don't know. Like Raekwon Davis is the one guy they signed in free agency to be here next year too. Tyquan Lewis, 2-year deal. It's like they're so deep on the defensive line that even if Laulu gets out there in mini camp and training camp and looks awesome, what does that amount to? Not only this year, but even like next year, they're really set up there well for the next couple of years.
Yeah, the defensive line, I think there's going to be, is good. The offensive line is good. You have good. You're still young at receiver, but you have good like numbers now there. And I actually think it's going to be a place like it seems like a roster that's pretty, without an injury, it's going to be pretty hard for somebody else to crack it. Because you have the three guys that played, 700 plus snaps last year. You have Mitchell, who's a second round pick. You have your punt returner, presumably, and kick returner. And then you have Ashton Doolin, who is like two or three roster spots in one. So like that seems like a pretty hard spot to crack for anybody else. It's corner, it's free safety, it's running back for me. Maybe you could add a linebacker, but not really.
The interesting thing with that is like there's parts of the roster we can criticize, and namely the starters in the secondary, but like how many second string spots would you say are a problem on this team? Like, because the way I look at it is like, I don't know how Nick Cross is going to do as a starting free safety, but like, I think Rodney Thomas is the second string free safety is fine. Solid.
Yeah. I mean somebody who's played 800 and something snaps, as a as a starter is good depth.
Yeah, I mean, you like, I mean, there's linebacker maybe, but you know, Ronnie Harrison did start at Sam last year. You've now got Jalen Carlisle in the mix. You know, outside corner could probably be it could be better because we don't know what Dallas Flowers is, but like backup running back is the only one to me that's like, yeah, they don't really have a backup at that spot, or running back, I should say. So that is partly why I believe that Trey Benson would have been their third round pick if they could have gotten him. But yeah, that's it speaks to the roster is that like there have been times in the past that it hasn't always felt that way. Is that not only are the starters maybe not great, but the backups, I just remember some of the depth they used to have it at wide receiver and defensive line. It just was like, it's not going to work very well. But I don't feel it that way anymore. I think more of the criticism, if you're going to have one about this roster, to me is, other than seeing what Anthony Richardson ultimately is, the real criticism is the same it's always been, which is like, is betting on this group of starting secondary players the wise investment? Did you need to take that gamble at an area that it is a passing game, passing league in an AFC of monster quarterbacks? But as far as like the roster as a whole, it's hard to see a lot of other, if you take that part out of it, even though it's a big, big part of the team, it's hard seeing a certain area being like a red flag outside of the other obvious thing here, which is the passing game has to come together around Anthony Richardson, who has to stay on the field.
Yeah. This sort of, well, the interesting part now is we're going to see, you know, do they make a signing? When does that come? Does it come soon? Now we kind of get into the building part of the off season. The NFL's schedule sort of slows down a little bit. You don't have anything. I mean, you get the schedule release. They try to keep some milestones in here to keep you pumped up, and we'll still have plenty of stuff from the Colts summer workouts. But once the draft is over, you're kind of starting to wind down towards that summer break, and then build up towards training camp. So, for the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel A. Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. We'll talk you through some fallout from the draft in a week, and see if maybe they sign somebody. But for now, that's the draft. You have your 9 picks. Go to IndyStar.com. We have a ton of stuff up on it. Like to the point that you should like search our bylines, because you probably, some of the stuff we've written is already off the page by a ways. So if you want more on the draft class, we've got it. We've got more coming. Like I said, for the Indy Star pod, or for the Colts Cover 2 podcast and Indy Star, I'm Joel A. Erickson. This is Nate Atkins.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.